Good afternoon, should I say g'day? My name is Peter Williams. I come from Land Capability Analysis in JOAD, DST. That is basically the equivalent of DSTL, and LCA is the equivalent of their LEG. So just a little bit of my bias before we begin. Land Capability Analysis, we deal mostly with the Army because we're land-based. We're looking primarily at the operational high tactical level, and we deal in the plus 10 to plus 25 time frame, plus 10 to plus 25 years time frame. So we're looking at Army modernization going to the future. So that's my bias. That's where I've come from, and it may come out in the talk, but hopefully this is a little bit more generic. I've been fortunate enough to be invited, and I've been asked to talk about designing analytical war games with the focus on analysis. And I'm hoping that I'll bring those two bits out for you and give you not necessarily the full Australian perspective, but at least a perspective of the branch that I come from. I'm going to quickly go through the holistic wargaming process. This isn't anything new. We've actually seen it quoted many times from the MOD and the DOD. This is just to provide some context with what I'll be talking about. So the client comes to us with a problem, and that is my background, that is my bias. I work for a client every single time. In my private life, I get to design and test war games for my friends, but I'm not lucky like Brian Train. For my professional life, I need to answer to a client. And that client demands good answers to their problem. And that's my job. Good answers require good analysis. If you don't have the analysis, you can't do good answers. What does good analysis require? Anybody want to guess? Anybody?
Good analysis.
Thank you, Julia. Good analysis requires good data. And how do you get good data? Anybody? Not a trick question. We're at connections. You need war game. Not a good war game, you'll notice. There is no such thing as a good war game. I saw Strike. It looks like a fantastic war game, but if I wasn't doing a problem that was suited to it, it would be terrible. So it's really important not to just go out and go, this is a great war game, I really like it. We spend a lot of effort trying to figure out what is the best war game to get the data. Then in order to facilitate that decision, we need to understand the problem fully. And if you don't understand the problem, you can't make that decision. And so then we complete the loop, and this is very similar to the cycle that we've seen before. But what you'll notice is that loop goes around, and if I'm an external person, if I'm the client, if I'm somebody just watching the analysis, to me it looks like I've understood the problem, I've selected a war game, whether that be choose one that exists or design one from scratch, I haven't made that distinction yet. It'll generate the data, we'll do some good analysis, we'll give a good answer, and we'll deliver that to the client. That's how it looks to the external person. As the analyst, I go through that loop entirely backwards. I start with the client and go, what is their problem and how am I going to answer it? What is the data I need? How am I going to generate that data? And is that appropriate? And that is my life, that is my cycle. So what I'm going to focus on today is two things. The first thing is, what does a good answer look like? What is my client after? And if I get a little bit of time, I'll also be looking at a little bit of war game design, a little bit about selecting that appropriate war game. And I'm going to talk about how do you enable smart people to be smart. So first things first, but not necessarily in that order. So we're going to start with what does a good answer look like? And what we call breakpoint analysis. So here is your war game. You've either designed one from scratch and you've spent your months. I'm going to be controversial and say playtesting is not necessary. Does anybody agree? No. Okay, so you've playtested, or you've selected one, you've got your computer assisted, you've bought one commercial off the shelf, it is the best one for the job. You go out, you get your participants, you whack them into that war game, you let them play, and at the end, you get some sort of result. And in this case, we mostly won, and that was a good result. Okay, so that is the war game as it looks. What you want to do is you want to replicate this. So over the course of a week, you may do 5 or 10 different war games. If you're really resource rich, looking at our American patriots, you may do 20. And, you know, you come back and go, we played it 20 times, we won 16 times out of 20. And as the analyst, I go, that's a really good result. Okay, we've spent months of work, we've either selected or we've built, we've played it, we've got our results. If I'm your client, I'm not happy. That is nowhere near good enough. That doesn't answer my problem. Winning it a few times, losing it, whatever, doesn't tell me anything. So what is it that I want out of you as the analyst? Well, what I want is So in order to describe that, we look at the scenario that you've played in. So any scenario or that war game is composed of a number of dimensions. And these dimensions could be, you know, your blue force in terms of its size and its composition, the red force also size and composition, whether there's lots of neutrals in your battle space, terrain, socio-political context, day or night, economic, all sorts of things. And these dimensions will change depending on the size and scale of the war game that you're looking at. So if you've got a detailed tactical simulation, then your terrain is really important. If you're looking at a strategic geopolitical thing, then the economic and the socio-political context. But either way, you pick a few of those which are really, really important. And what happens is when you do that war game, you've got one potential snapshot. You've got one enemy, one friendly, one terrain type, and you've answered that question for your client for one instance of what we consider a potential future scenario. Now, if I'm the client, I look at that and I go, well, what happens if that enemy was slightly stronger? Yes, you defeated it, but what if it is stronger? What if that terrain was slightly different? What if the political context was different? Okay, you've told me one possible thing that could happen. I'm not going to base a whole bunch of acquisition and money on that decision. So, the client is actually asking you, at what point does that force break? Okay, that's what I want to know. Not whether you won the game or whether you lost the game or whether your participants had a really fun time playing that game. I want to know what will break the force. Okay, so now we get to feasible scenario spaces. And this is sort of the philosophical panacea of this whole concept. And that is, you can draw a map with your dimensions and you can basically plot where you're successful, where you're not successful, and the boundary based on those dimensions. It's a lot easier said than done, but we've got a couple of examples. So on the left, and this is a greatly redacted version of something that we did a few years ago. Basically, we're looking at number of tanks in an urban clearance type operation, and what we found is no tanks is not good. As you increase your tanks, your mission success grew, until you got to a point where mission success started to get lower and lower and lower. And what we found is, just from memory, it's between 4 and 8 is a really good bound. If you had between 4 and 8 tanks, you were successful. Anything less than that, anything more than that, not successful. And I've got another one, just a little dummy example over there, where the breakpoint is actually dependent on multiple dimensions. So it's not just about changing one dimension and finding that breakpoint. Often they will feed off each other. But the idea is to report back to the client the where along those dimensions you will break, and then the most important step in the analysis is the why. Why did this happen? So why all of a sudden are more tanks giving us lower mission success? Well, in this particular instance, that turned out to be, well, there are a lot more targets. They ran out of space to hide. The logistics burden was massive. And all of a sudden, going up to 10, 12, 13 tanks in this small area became much more of a burden. And so it's not just a case of, hey, client, buy more and more tanks, you will be better. It's, you need to look at this region. So if we get back to our generic model of wargaming, there we go. Client comes to me, he says, I want to buy a new missile. I'm an analyst, I go, no, that's not the question you want to ask. What you want to ask is something along the lines of, under what conditions will that new missile not really be successful for me? And Robert gave a good introduction that conversation with the client can take days, weeks. In my experience, the most time I've spent going back and forth with the client is 8 months between them coming to me and going, here's my question, and me going, okay, now we've got agreement on what it is that you're actually asking. So that takes a long time. But basically, they want to know, if I'm going to invest in new capability, if I'm going to change my concept of operation, what can the enemy do to defeat me? And often it's not the things that you think of. And what you want to give back to the client at the end of the report is, why is that not coming up? There we go. If the enemy does this, if they do that, or if these other things happen, then I'll be in trouble. And the client wants to know where your force will break and what are the causes of those points that will break. And often, they're not the things that you think of. So philosophically, this is the type of analysis and the type of result that we want to deliver to our client each time we go into a study. So now, I'm going to talk a little bit about, a little footnote, a large footnote if you like, about some considerations for your war game design that will help support that. So, as we've seen, wargaming isn't about winning or losing, it's about breaking the force. Wargaming is an inherently human activity. I think we're all in agreement about that. And humans are devious, ruthless, cunning, and creative. Okay? They want to think outside the box. So your wargame, when you're designing it, or whether you're choosing it, needs to enable smart people to be smart and let them think outside the box. So just because you think a problem needs a nice tactical solution to it, the people who want to break it may not be thinking the way that you're thinking. So, how do you break the force in smart ways? Well, when you turn up and you give your players a war game, you've basically coded into it all of the tools that they have available, okay? So if you've got a tactical war game and you're allowing them to move, you're allowing them to use cover, you're allowing them to fire, and you're allowing them to detect, that's the full spectrum of tools that they've got. Things like terrain is easy, artillery, reasonably easy, sensors, we've all done that before, logistics, fine. EW, cyber, IO, these things are getting a little bit more difficult as we work into the future, but they're the things that the red side are now looking to use against your force. Okay, they're thinking more and more outside of the box. Okay, you turn up and go, we've got a whole bunch of tanks. If your opponent, if your red team player says, I want to go into that local village and get a whole bunch of kids and line them up in front of our troops so that you can't shoot us, your war game needs to be able to model that, because that is something that will break your force, right? If your client is going to spend $20 million and all they need to do is get some kids and go, you can't do anything against us, that is a serious weakness. So one of the things that we like to do is, in that whole design phase, before we start wargaming, is we hold a whole series of exploratory workshops and we use a whole bunch of creativity thinking, adaptive red teaming exercises to look at all of the ways that a very smart, creative, ruthless enemy will want to break your force before you start putting that into the war game. So we use adaptive red teaming things, think outside the box. What are the ways that will defeat that may not be thought of? And then if you have that tool available to your players when they start to play it, then they're able to break your force more effectively. This process leads to a more robust analysis of the strengths and the weaknesses, and you will find that the smart, adaptive enemy will find ways to break your force that you never thought of and your client will never think of. And that is something that's really, really valuable to them, because from my experience, one of the best questions that I've learned to ask, particularly in an AAR, is not what will break your force, because then they'll just think, well, if the enemy was stronger, they would defeat us. If this was more, I ask the question, what is the cheapest, simplest, quickest thing the enemy could think of to defeat your plan? And then all of a sudden your players start to think outside the box, going, okay, yep, we've tried the frontal attack, we've tried artillery, but if I want a really cheap solution, I'll go and get a journalist and give them a camera and put them on the hill, and the moment you start shooting us, I'll put that all over the media, and that will completely defeat your plan. So you need to be able to model these things and capture it. And I think that's all I have to say. Thank you very much. Just a quick note, after the Q&A session, I have to depart rapidly, so if you've got any further questions, feel free to email me. And it is confirmed, Connections Oz is on 10 to 12 December in Sydney, Australia, if you want to come over and get some heat. So in December, it'll be getting up to about 30, 32 degrees. So that's it.